Welcome back to Silver Lake TV. I'm John Papa here, and this is Depeche Manani.
Yes, thank you, John.
We were just talking about, you've been here several times.
I think this is my third trip here.
Well, what's today's episode about?
So today I'm here to talk about WCF Radio Services. Most people know what it is, but people might be wondering, what have you been doing since V1?
You've been sitting around doing nothing, haven't you?
Actually, we've been doing quite a bit. It's just that people weren't aware of it, so I figured the best day to do it is come on Silver Lake TV and talk about what we've been doing. So, sometime back in probably March, I believe, we released SB1 RTM. The beta was in October, so I'm here to talk about some of the new features in SB1.
No, March 2011. 11.
Sorry.
Okay.
March 2011, we released RTM for Service Pack 1. And in Mix, we also released a Service Pack 2 preview, which primary focus was for Silver Lake 5 support.
Okay, and it's now May-ish. I think it's May when we'll air. So right now, their Service Pack 1 is out, fully released. Service Pack 2 is a preview.
Preview mode.
That's available.
That's available for people to download. So I'm here to talk about some of the features of those releases.
Like, so basically catching up with all the features and radio services since the initial release.
Exactly. Cool. So most of the biggest theme we use while prioritizing these features was what are the top customer asks, what do they want, what are they missing. So we try to address those. And obviously, we want to hear more about it, but what more features are missing, but I just want to come here and tell you what's there today.
Okay, so we're going to go over what those new features are, and then specifically we're going to dive into three of those features.
Exactly.
So why don't we first start with what those features are, and then we'll come back to what those three that you're going to dive into deep on.
Sure. So in SP1, actually, one of the biggest things we did was added support for complex objects, or it's also known as complex types if you're using EAF. This is a case where you have customer address, but address is not a table. You've abstracted your... You've added object abstraction on your data model where you probably have, say, 50 rows on your column, and you take 4 columns and you say extract complex object. The key thing is here, it's not an entity. It doesn't have a primary key.
It's more like a struct.
It's more like a struct. It doesn't have a foreign key.
But and the reason you pull that off, like an address, you'd pull that off because you could reuse it across different objects too,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And the thing was in V1, if you realize you couldn't actually, you could use it, your model could have it, but that particular property never got code generated to your client.
Oh, so it didn't create a property for you in the class and the client.
Yeah. On your server, you had it, but it wasn't there on the client. You probably did something like adding a get method for it to basically code generate with a key attribute and the property that you define to get it code gen.
Yep.
So we've actually taken that restriction out, and you can actually do that now.
Oh, good. So you can create your complex objects in the server like you normally would in your model.
Right.
And now resources respects that and generates on the client.
Generates on the client. It's
good.
Not exactly an entity on the client, but I'll show you in my demo what exactly gets created.
Okay.
The other feature we added was custom code generation. So one of the things was people wanted to customize the code and control the code that gets generated on the client. Maybe there could be multiple reasons. You want to do base class injection, you want to do some logging mechanism, maybe you want to have better XML doc comments.
And we're talking about the code that gets generated by default resources. It are the entities that get generated on the client.
Entities and domain context.
And the domain context.
Right.
So you want to change something about the entities, maybe give them a base class.
Right, maybe add a base class, say my entity.
Or give them all an extra property.
Yeah.
Called I like Depeche.
Right. Whatever you want to
true
do with
or false.
It. Yeah. The other thing we also added support was for shared entities.
Okay.
So this is something if you try to, if you realize you know you write a domain service. Let's take example of the book club application we wrote.
Okay.
Remember, if you remember, we had all the entities and get and insert update methods in that one domain service.
One domain service to rule them all.
Yeah, and that was book club domain service. But in reality, the app had books, book catalog, and a checkout service.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it, there's a checkout page. But I wanted, when I was an app developer, I wanted to basically break it out. I like, fine, these methods go in my book club service, and these go in my checkout service.
Yeah, and the way you could equate that with like a WCS service or a web service, old ASMX, is you might have different ASMX or WCS service files.
Right.
With RIA services, you used to be restricted to having one big...
Right, because we couldn't... There was some technical limitations of how we what we generate on the client. So the reasons why we couldn't get that in V1.
And you might have 1,000 of these methods.
Exactly.
Sticking 1,000 literally in one file.
Right. So you have 4 methods for each entity. If you do insert, update, delete, query.
Mm-hmm.
Now number of multiple times of entities you have. So now we have actually given you, taken out the restriction where you can actually take a, say, book entity, have it in book club domain service, as well as in checkout domain service.
Right, and you could have like a security one, an authorization one,
different
as many as you like.
Yeah.
But the problem is now my entities might be used in multiple services. How do you get around that?
Using different services as in...
So you've got different domain services all sharing these entities.
Right.
So now we've got this new feature that allows you to share them, right?
Right. That's what it lets you do. We also added support for localization.
Good.
So basically, if you are running your client on a different locale and your server in a different locale, you get more localized messages. These are more app developer messages than actually end user, because the user app developer controls what the end user sees.
Right.
But for the app developer, we've added localization support into Visual Studio, so the domain service wizard is now localized. The business application template is also localized as well.
Okay.
So you have like, if you create a new, say in French Visual Studio, you'll get a French version for it. You can customize what you want to select there.
Cool.
One of the things we also noticed was people wanted more MVVM guidance, mm-hmm. MVVM support for RIA services. We've added a component called Domain Collection View.
Domain Collection View.
In the toolkit. Basically, Kyle has a good blog about it, which basically gives you more DDS, domain data source type functionality, but it's not a user control. It doesn't sit in your view. It sits in your view model.
So it gives you the domain collection view, if I'm hearing it right. It allows you to do some of the things like the filtering, sorting, grouping.
To some extent, yeah.
To a certain degree, without having to have that user control. Some people don't particularly like.
Exactly.
And is that in, you said it's in a toolkit?
It's in the toolkit.
Okay. And we'll put up a link to Kyle's blog post.
Kyle's blog as well. We also added support for Windows Azure Table Storage. Okay. So if you want to actually use Windows Azure to host your servers, to mm-hmm. host your data, you have two options. You have SQL Azure, which you can use normal Entity Framework to talk to. But you also have, what they have is a Windows Azure Table Storage, which is more file type system mm-hmm. data storage. They have a domain service for that, which you can actually talk to that and actually do all sorts of query and operations on top of that.
So that's not hosting RIA services in the cloud. That's hosting your storage in the cloud.
And basically talking to that storage from a RIA service application. So that's some of the features in SP1. There's a lot more.
Right, and we'll dive deep into the complex objects, the custom code, and then the shared entities.
Right.
So what's in SP2 preview? Because that's out. The preview meaning it's not full release.
It's not full release. It's not even in beta right now, so it's a preview release.
Is this a go live license?
It's not a go live license this time. So
means use at your own risk.
Use at your own risk. So one of the things which we couldn't get into SP1 timeframe was daytime offset.
Okay.
Then the other request we got was daytime offset is basically this new daytime object where you can say, hey, this is my current locale, add the offset, get me the right data.
Gotcha.
Right. Then we also added support for what's operation tag. So operation tag was one of the things we heard a lot was, hey, I want to tag my request to the server. We also at Mix announced a jQuery client for RIA services.
Yep, good session. I saw that.
It was one of the highly attended sessions, mm-hmm. so it was a good session. Brad Olenek, there's a video for it if you guys want.
So RIA services isn't just Silverlight anymore. It does other things too.
Well, RIA services had these endpoints. We just figured we'll add more rich client-side support to it.
Yeah.
Like, just give it some more functionality than just talking to a regular JSON endpoint.
That's great.
And the other thing, EF Code First came out recently, so we're trying to add support for that. That is not in the preview today, but we're looking to add it maybe in the RTM feature. RTM version of the SP2 will have it for sure.
Let's talk quickly about, EF Code First, not that you couldn't use it in a project now. You can. It's been released. So what about RIA services doesn't work with EF Code First right now? That's changing.
So the way it works is at runtime, you look at the metadata mm-hmm. of the entity, and that's coming from EF.
Right.
The RIA services today does not have logic to understand or go find that metadata at runtime because it needs to do validation, it needs to do code generation.
And a lot of the EF Code First runs off of convention over configuration.
Right. So these are some of the features. There's a lot more. But the best way to think of this is the way people must be wondering, why is SP1 and SP2 so close to each other, mm-hmm. right? The reality is when we got done with complex object, it was one of the top feature asks. We wanted to get it out. So most of these features, we got it done. We wanted to get it out. We didn't want to wait for it. So we got it out in SP1.
Yeah, why wait for a future product cycle? So SP1's out, we got it going.
Exactly.
These are some other top things.
Right. Another key distinction I want to point out is if you install Visual Studio 2010 SP1, you do get RIA services SP1. Because I remember meeting some folks at Mix and like, I installed Visual Studio 2000 SP1, but I don't have RIA services. I'm still using RIA services V1. I'm like, no, you're not using.
So you don't have to download specifically RIA services SP1.
Correct.
It comes with the service pack for Visual Studio.
Exactly. And the SP2 preview comes with the Silverlight 5 tools chainer. Gotcha. So if you install Silverlight 5 tools, you'll get the beta. Yeah, the beta.
Okay.
You'll get it. And one thing also I want to point out is the SP2 features, if you're still targeting Silverlight 4, they will work.
Okay.
So they're not specific to Silverlight 5. You could use it for 4 as well as for 5.
I think we've hit quite a bit of stuff here. Why don't we dive into how does complex objects work?
So let's.
Luckily, you have a demo.
I do have a demo. So let's look at complex objects. So what I've done is I've created I'm not using Entity Framework. I'm mm-hmm. actually showing you more POCO.
Okay. Got a POCO object called Customer.
Basically, that's more Actually, for demo purposes, it illustrates the problem very easily. What are we trying to do here?
It looks so funny without an inheritance or an interface, doesn't it?
It does. So what I've done here is I've actually just created a customer object. It has a customer ID. And this, I wanted this to be my primary entity. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have the key attribute right here. It has an address, which is a complex type. And I'll jump into that. And it has a name and a company name. But so initially in V1, what happened was if I was using this in a domain service, this address field wasn't generated on my client.
Okay. Because show the address type, actually, if you can show that class real quick.
Right. I'm going to jump into that now. And let's just go to address right here.
Okay.
It's just an address type.
It's a class.
It's a class. It's a regular class. First thing you notice, there's no key attribute. Mm-hmm. I have some types defined here, some just properties on it. And also I've added some validation attribute. So what I want to point out here is that you can write the same validation logic on your complex type or on your entity. We'll respect that.
Yeah, it's a good point there, because you've got your same validation types. For all intents and purposes, it looks just like all the other classes. The
exactly.
Big difference is there's no key.
There's no key attribute. There's no unique identifier.
Right, because it's not going to have a matching table, right. For example, even.
In fact, I have a little bug in my code here. I don't need this property customer ID.
Right.
That's the reality.
You just need address information.
You just need address information.
Unless every address has a customer ID.
Exactly.
But it doesn't.
Right, so now let's look at the domain service. What does my domain service look like? So since it's a POCO, I just created a list for it. And what you can do is, what I'm doing is I have an iQueryable of get customers, mm-hmm. which just returns that list as a queryable, and that's it.
Right, so it's going to go out and get a list of customer objects. Customer objects has a property called address or other.
So as you see, I'm populating it right here.
Yep.
This is more demo code that I had. But you can see I have this billing address, which is not a new address.
Yep.
And I'm just populating that.
And so, again, no ID or anything.
No ID or nothing. This is just, I'm actually populating only two properties instead of the six I had there or seven I had there.
I like your data. Behind you.
That's Jack Bauer.
Oh, is that Jack Bauer's address? He's behind you?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So let's load up the app, what it looks like. So I've actually just gone ahead and done some UI around it. It's mm-hmm. not the best looking. I just dragged a data grid as well as a detailed scenario. So basically I do, as you can see, this is my complex object right here.
Okay.
That's my entity. And this is...
And again, we could have put those right in here if we wanted to. We could put the street address
and
code.
Correct.
It's not that it's hierarchical at all. The data is just in there as a
just in there.
Class.
Right. And the reason I have a save button right here, and you can see it's disabled. So mm-hmm. first thing I'm going to show you is I can...
Change tracking. So it's change tracking aware.
It's change tracking aware.
Good.
So it enables the save button. And the other thing I can show you, the validation that we were talking about, if you remember, I had a string length validation attribute.
I don't remember, but I'll take your word for it.
It's for 10 characters. And as soon as I tab out, I do get my validation error.
Sweet.
And this is actually the entity object, Jason Bourne, also is aware of these validation errors as well as change tracking. So it is bubble up to the entity as well.
So for all intents and purposes, you can now use complex types like we would normally use them with classes, and we don't have to worry about any special conditions.
Correct.
Great.
So now, before we jump into the next demo, let me show you one quick thing, which is let's look at the code that gets generated.
I like when I can use new features and I don't have to do anything differently.
Correct.
That's kind of cool.
So once my machine responds.
So now we're looking at code generation?
Yeah, we're looking at code generation. Now let's look at the customer first.
So what's the reason we're going to do code generation here?
Oh, this is what gets generated on the client, because initially that address property wasn't getting generated.
Mm-hmm.
Now it does.
Okay.
But the key distinction is that address is not going to be an entity.
All right, so you're going to look at here on the client what got generated.
Right. So as you can see, now I have an address field.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's look at what the address type looks like. It's called a complex object.
Okay.
It does implement all the interfaces. My mouse is not acting, keeping up with me.
All right, so we got a complex object, which is going to show us all the base stuff, like INPC,
I notify data error info. It is... Not an entity, but it has most of the characteristics that it has. And that's why you see the change tracking, change notification.
Yep. And the iEditable gives you the change tracking, the INPC gives you the binding awareness, and iNotified error info gives you the validation.
Validation errors. And those get bubbled up into entities. So if you look at that addresses, complex objects, entity property, the parent, you can see the validation errors, and you can get the error messages for
it.
So this is one of the features people asked a lot about, and we finally got it out in SP1, and this was the biggest motivation factor of releasing SP1 sooner than SP2.
And the next feature is the code generation, custom code generation.
Custom code generation. So what we've done is I'm going to actually switch demos now. I'm going to switch into an application. which is the book club application that we have. And basically what I've done here is in my class, in my client project.
Okay, your Silverlight client.
Silverlight client, I've added a class called myentity.cs.
Okay.
And it derives from entity. I could have, this is very empty for the demo purposes, but I could have actually had another property sitting here, maybe some other interfaces I wanted to implement.
An entity is the?
Is the base entity that Rhea Services, it's a Rhea
right.
Services entity.
So you're basically inheriting from the Rhea Services entity.
Rhea Services
entity. You can add your own properties.
I can add my own properties, I can implement interfaces that
right.
I wanted to do. I could have done anything. So now I want to basically inject this, add this my entity as the base type that gets generated for, say, customer, or in this
so
case.
So you want when everything comes over from Rhea Services, you want them to automatically be my entities.
Exactly. Book. Basically, book in this case should come from my entity.
Yep.
So what I've done here is I've actually created a new project. It's just a class library.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I want to call out is it uses the toolkit component that we have, which is tools.txt template.
Mm-hmm.
This is a T4 template that we have shipped, part of the toolkit which you can use, part of their application. And what I'll do here is I'll open up this guy. So it basically, you define a type of what your entity generator is, and it derives from C# entity generator, which is coming from the T4 template. And it has a bunch of override functions.
So when you generate, okay, so you're overriding here, what was that method generating your class itself?
The one below?
Yeah.
So what I've done is this C# entity generator has a bunch of overrides, and what it does is you can generate
the body, constructor,
whatever you want to override here. In my case, I've just generated the class declaration.
Okay.
Right? So what I'm doing here is, since it's an entity generator, I'm basically checking if the type is user,
mm-hmm.
because in this case, the user implements iPrinciple, and for the demo, I just wanted to get something quick and easy. And what I'm doing is I'm basically writing, instead of using the default template it uses, I'm actually saying this type name derives from my entity.
Right, so this case is going to go and generate what it normally would have generated. This one's, you're saying, I'm overriding it, I'm going to make it inherit from my entity.
Correct. And what I'm going to do next is, so now that I have this class library, what do I do with it?
How do you use it?
How do you use it? Actually, it's very simple. All I have to do is go to my web project and add a reference to test T4 code gen. And when I close it, and if I build my application now, I'll actually pick it up, and the code that gets generated will be my entity.
And was that, I didn't catch it, was that the name of the project in the solution?
That was a server project. So you have where your domain server sits.
Okay.
So you want to put it in the same project as your domain server sits.
Show your Solution Explorer real quick if you could.
Yeah, I'll just show it.
So we've got, here's our web service where the domain service is going to be.
Right.
And then you got down at the bottom, you got test T4 code gen, which is where you created that other class.
Other class, exactly. And now let's look at the generated code.
All right, so we just compiled, we put it up there, and if we go to the Silverlight project.
We go to Silverlight project.
The G file.
Yeah, the G file. So, as instructed, the user object, we can find it.
Yep, at the bottom.
Is still deriving from entity.
Yep, he's just deriving from the base class entity right here at the top.
Right, now let's look at the book, and it derives from my entity.
Yep.
And this is how I can do base class injection.
Now, so we go back to MyEntity. At this point, we haven't accomplished anything because MyEntity doesn't have any additional features.
Right.
But you could put anything you want there.
You could actually implement other interfaces. Maybe you want to do logging, for example,
or
anything you want there. So it's basically just a way of centralizing what you want to do across entities.
Now, when you save that class, so I do a Rhea Services save on a MyEntity object, save changes, for example.
Right.
I make a bunch of changes, domain context recognizes it, I do a save changes. Because they're a different type now, is it still going to be recognized?
Yeah, because it still derives from entity.
Great.
So it's still going to be recognized. So the key is to make sure it derives from entity.
You just don't want to be storing extra properties in
there,
because the main context won't be aware of.
Aware of it.
Right. So I wouldn't want to stick in like first name.
Exactly.
Not that I want that in all my classes anyway.
If you want to persist it to the database, then you shouldn't. But if you want to just do it for UI purposes,
yes,
you should.
It's kind of like in a view model in a VM. You stick extra properties just for the screen, but you don't want to persist them.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's the T4 code generation sample.
Then the third new feature was the shared entities.
So the way I see shared entities is when I use V1, I realized that my domain service just got huger. It was huge, and it just grew bigger every time.
In real world apps, it could be really big for one.
And like in our case, when we created the book club application, we had books, we had members, we had checkout, we had book of the day, we had categories.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the application, let's run the application real quick.
And the reason we did this is we didn't want to have multiple copies of the same entities on the client. Because you have to resolve that then.
Exactly. You have to figure out which one is. If you're passing between views, you need to make
sure it's just one book. We didn't want to have seven copies
of books. Correct. And let's run this application. So once it loads up, you'll see there is a books page that comes up.
Okay.
And then I have this checkouts page. Today, the way this application is structured, it is going against the same domain service.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of it, this is technically my books catalog, and this is my checkout.
And they're very different. It's not so much the screens that derive what makes a different domain service, but it's the functionality.
The functionality, exactly.
You've got checkouts, which are completely different. It's purchasing and orders.
Or queuing it up, whatever you want to do there.
And the first one's cataloging.
Cataloging, all right? So I wanted my domain service, or I want my services to be structured like that. In V1, we didn't allow you to do that,
okay.
But now we do.
So how do you do it?
It is, you don't have to change anything, as you said. You like not changing, doing what you're used to, and that's all you have to do. So what I'm going to do
here. I like magic.
Yes. this is not magic.
It's not magic, I know.
So what I'm going to do here is basically I'm just going to go onto services, and I'm going to say add a new item.
Okay, so we have a book club service. We're going to add a new one called like checkout service.
Correct.
Or something.
Anything. Checkout service.
And we're effectively going to move some methods over, I assume.
Well, in my case, I'll just go
just create new ones.
New.
That's a good point. If you change the ones that were in Book Club, you'd want to copy them over.
Right.
If you didn't change them, you could just go through this wizard.
Exactly. So I'm just going to create a new checkout service. I selected books, checkout, and member.
Right, so you need to know who checked it out.
Who checked it out and what's the queue. So that's what I selected here. And I'm just going to do, let me just cheat here real quick. And I'm going to go to Book Club Service.
Yep.
And I'm just going to copy this.
Because that's the change I was mentioning, yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got a descending order by.
Yeah, but in this case, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to. What's my Visual Studio response? I'm just going to stick this in here.
So you're not just getting checkouts, you're getting the book and the members in there.
Right.
Now, effectively, you could remove the get checkouts from the other service.
I could.
Which you probably would want to do.
I want to do. But one thing, if you've used Rio Service and you're doing object graphs, you've noticed that you have to put include two places. But in my case, I'm just putting it one because I've already put it before. So I have to go back and touch it because what we do is we actually respect that change.
Right. That's in the metadata, right?
That's in the metadata file. So I'm not going to do anything.
And that's a good point. You don't have to do it because you already did it. But if I was starting a new, if I started out with two services,
then
I'd still have to go back.
You still have
there.
To go back and do it. But in this case, since I'm just taking an existing V1 app and moving to SP1, I'm just going to use it as is. So if you've used your sample of the MVVM, so I'm just using that exact same application here, and you had a book club context, as you can see right here.
This class is up in the client?
Yeah, this class is up in the client.
Okay.
And you're going against the checkout service.
My domain context.
Right, this is the service that backs a view model. This is not to be mistaken with the domain service.
This is using that nice abstracted pattern somebody came up with.
Right, some guy named John Papa.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have heard of him. So what I'm going to do here is I'm actually just going to comment out this guy. Right?
Okay.
And I'm going to uncomment this guy. I just conveniently had it sticking in there.
So you get a different domain context.
Different domain context.
But the same entities.
Same entities. Same method names. Everything same. And now I'm just going to uncomment this guy. Basically, I'm just initializing a new one here and just newing it up.
That's pretty nice. So switching shared entities, all you got to do is change the context that you're using.
Yeah. If you're using ViewModel, it's very easy. If you're doing it in XAML, you need to go find a place for the domain context you've been using. So it's fairly easy. It's just that if you have the method name same, it's easy to move over to this.
That's the nice thing with the abstractions. You didn't touch the view model code. You didn't touch the views.
I did not touch anything. I just touched the service that backed the view model. And if I go to checkouts, I'll get the checkouts details here.
Tell me, admit it, there was like a 3-second hesitation there. You were thinking, I hope this works.
I have my fingers crossed right here.
No, that's great, though.
I practiced this like 6 times before coming here, so I knew.
No, I really like that because that's one of the things that people have complained sometimes about some of our products.
Right.
They're almost like demoware because it all works. You have put all your code in one file.
Right, and that's part of the reason.
And this is a lot nicer.
This is a lot nicer. It actually makes your server look much more structured. You can abstract
it. And it's dead simple.
It is simple. It's simple in my case, but yes, there might be some issues if you're doing a much bigger case.
Mm-hmm. So this is great. And to wrap up with everything real quick, we talked about what's out today. Boom.
Right.
Everything's Service Pack 1. Service Pack 2 preview is out today.
Preview is out today.
And we have some links. We're going to link to Kyle's blog. We'll link to these guys.
Right.
And you had some mixed videos, which I think were also pretty good.
Yeah. So the mixed videos, we can put it out there. Only thing to point out is EF Code First is not out there. So if you're looking for using EF Code First, sorry to disappoint you, but it's it's coming soon.
EF Code First exists, just not your support of it.
Yeah, our support for EF Code First.
Yeah, EF Code First, yeah, that the RTM that, was out.
Yeah, Scott Anselman did it on the mix keynote, so.
Yeah, Scott's going, what?
Yeah.
What? So, no, just kidding.
So, yeah, that's out there. The jQuery client's also on the Coldplex site, so if you go to dubcf.coldplex.com, probably post a link for it, that's out there as well. And
Just quickly on the jQuery, I mean, basically you're still using the same server-side stuff.
Same server-side stuff, same domains.
But on the
domains.
Client, you're still getting change tracking and all that fun stuff?
You're getting change tracking, you're getting validation, you're getting the object graph. So if you ever need to have you want to put your RIA service application on an iPhone device.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we don't have native support, but hey, this is still a solution that you could use.
But you could use jQuery and not give up a ton of functionality. You're basically getting RIA services.
Exactly.
Awesome.
And one more thing I want to actually call out is our toolkit is now on NuGet. So if you go to NuGet, you search for RIA services, you'll get all the components
Great. The
toolkit has. The product's not there, but the toolkit is definitely there. In fact, one of the things which I love about NuGet is we have the endpoints one. So we did an endpoints episode sometime last year.
Yes.
Remember, I had to go type in the web config, I had to go add this. Hey, the NuGet package does it
for you. So NuGet doesn't just install the DLLs. It brings actually down and modifies your web config.
Exactly. And it takes it out when you uninstall it.
For
uninstall
the endpoints, yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So we are on NuGet now. So that's all that I had.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
So you guys have been busy. I was joking before, you haven't done much since the
release. We have been busy. I've been quite busy.
All right. So what have you done for me lately? We'll have an SP3 and 4 coming out next week, right?
No.
I'm just kidding. Hey, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Thank you all for watching.